Sometimes I land under the moon.
Welcome to the Torah Teachers Roundtable, Apostolic Edition, with your hosts Rob Miller, Mark Patron, and yours truly, Mark Call. We hope you'll find this discussion entertaining, thought-provoking, and that above all, you'll be like the Bereans and search out the scriptures for yourself, see if these things be true. Okay, good afternoon, folks. I hope we are back. This is Mark Call, and we have at least two-thirds of us are dead. Here on the Torah Teachers Roundtable Tanakh Edition. Gonna try to continue with the show. We've had some issues, technical issues, and snowpocalypse issues, and several things over the last couple of weeks. But hopefully this week we can continue our look at the book of Ezekiel. We were in chapter 21. That's where we're still in. As we got to the top of the hour, we were trying to connect Mark Patron. Can't get him on. He's having a problem not only with Skype, which he's had forever, but also a problem with his cell phone. So if he can get that fixed, he'll join us. Otherwise, I think we have Ken Irvin online here. And he says he got disconnected, but I see him still connected. So, Ken, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Can you hear me right now?
Okay, yes, you are. You're still connected. I'm not sure what you thought had happened, but I never saw you disconnect from this end anyway. So what we're going to do is work our way through
from Mark Patron.
Sorry, say again.
I said I got disconnected from Mark Patron.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. Yes. I'll continue to try to get him on here while we're talking. But when we last talked, okay. It's been several weeks ago at this point. We were in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 21, about halfway through the chapter. And I showed us having gotten somewhere to the vicinity of verse 14. Do you have any comments you want to make on that first part, or should we just read on and continue a little bit with just the two of us till we try to get Mark on again?
I have it here to where we quit with notes on verse 11.
Well, go ahead and do what you'd like to. Catch up then.
I'm sorry. But the person you
okay, well, I tell you what, let's read 12 through 14 again, just as a brief.
Okay, so MP is still incommunicado.
He is
in. Says, cry and wail. This is the words of Yah, the words in red. Son of man, for it'll be against my people, against all the princes of Israel. Terrors, including the sword, will be against my people. Therefore, strike your thigh, because it is a testing. And what if the sword despises even the scepter? The scepter shall be no more. And we're going to get a therefore in the next verse. So go ahead and comment on what you'd like, and we'll continue.
Yeah, verse 12 there, again, Yah is expecting Ezekiel to show yet another condition of terror and woes. I mean, we've been seeing this for a number of chapters now, you know, that Yah has been having Ezekiel act out these parts to really show fear, fright, terror, horror, you know, et cetera. And this is yet another instance of this where he's going to act out and this is to show Yisrael, all the people of Yisrael, how they will be feeling, how they will be acting, you know. So Ezekiel has become more vocal here, though. He's crying and he's howling. All of those in power or in charge of his tribes, called princes of Yisrael here, you know, whether they were righteous or wicked, they would be watching this, they would be seeing this, and they would be then knowing that they will be acting like this, crying and howling out, you know, feeling the terror and the woes. And all will be smitten, again, whether they're righteous or wicked, all will be smitten, even unto the thigh. I'm not sure if the thigh is being stated here to indicate that no further seed will be produced, or if it may mean that it will be more dramatic and painful in where exactly the sword is being applied to. I mean, what would be your thought on that one there, MC, with regarding the thigh? Are you listening? Hello? Am I still connected?
Okay, sorry. I'm trying to do about four things at once here, Ken, including call Mark Patron and see why it is that he will refuse the calls from the station. If you're ready, then let's go ahead and just continue.
No, okay. Here, then, if you don't have a comment on the thigh, here, let me say a little bit about 13 and 14. This appears to be a great trial or even a final investigation where Yah is finalizing on the fact that this destruction would be fulfilled from the top of authority all the way to the bottom and from the righteous on down to the wicked to include the kings, which is why you see the word rod mentioned in these verses. And yet not even the kings will escape his wrath. And I can imagine Ezekiel smiting his hands together violently, you know, once, then twice, then three times. Now, most commentaries that I've viewed seem to agree that this is an indication of how Yah had Yisrael and Yerushalayim specifically struck three individual times by the Babylonian king, Nebuchadnezzar. And the three kings struck by the sword or the army in order, time-wise, was Jehoiakim, then Jeconiah, and lastly Zedekiah. We remember Zedekiah was the last one. And, of course, the blow to King Zedekiah was the final blow to bring down all of Yisrael. That's when they all went into captivity, and he was the last, one of the more wicked kings as well. So that's what he's talking about here. And, just giving not only all the people, but the king himself even, a feel for what it's going to be like, what's about to happen. Now, remember that Yah always tells his people what he's about to do. So it's funny that even when he's about to spank his people, he tells them that as well. We know that he tells them good prophetic things in advance. And I'm even hearing a lot of that kind of word today from today's prophets, such as Julie Green. If you ever listen to her, Julie Green is actually, just simply proclaims everything that comes through her from Yah, and telling us to get ready for he's going to put down the Biden and he's going to bring all the wicked down and all this kind of stuff. Well, I can only pray that she is a true prophet, because what I hear from her is just wonderful. Good news.
Yeah, and it sounds like ear tickling to me, Ken.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it sounds a lot like ear tickling to me. We've been hearing of this for so long, when in fact, I think the real truth is that Billy Graham's wife was closer to correct. If Yah does not judge the United States of America, he owes an apology to Sodom and Gomorrah, because we're seeing it.
Yeah, we're seeing it, we're feeling it, and we're being judged already. I mean, look at all the people dying, just of the jab itself even. I just heard the latest count was 2,500 people per day were dying. 5,000 also are being brought out of normal life because they're so damaged. So altogether, that's 7,500 coming out of the workforce each and every day just because of the jab. So, that is just incredible to think that they're able to both kill and maim that many people, which they're doing, because we've openly and we've just ignorantly, as I see it, accepted this vaccine, accepted that, it's got to be the fix for this problem. that, you know, we know that now that man generated. Anyway, getting back to the verses here. So this was truly bad news for Yisrael, because he had judged them, and now he's going to proclaim it upon them, and he's letting them know even in advance, like he does, that he's about to bring them down. And so here's how they will act. I feel for them in that way, but at the same time, they deserve it. So yeah, that's up through 14. Are you having any luck with MP on your end?
I'm gonna try something else, but I'll probably not wait until the bottom of the hour break here in a minute. There's only so many things I can do at once without, especially since whenever I try to call him and he doesn't answer it, it comes on air and doesn't sound good. I'll do it one more time.
And he did say that. Okay, he did say that his disturb is not selected.
Yeah,
just
however,
pass it on
I'm
to
sorry,
you.
But the person you called has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet.
Jeez.
Goodbye.
Yeah, that's definitely on his end, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a lot I can say other than somebody is not telling the whole story.
I'm sorry, but the person you called has a voicemail box that has not
right.
been set up
okay,
yet.
Okay, enough of that.
Goodbye.
Anyway, okay. Well, if you don't have any more comments on that, I guess we could read on a little bit.
Verse 14. It's important to go ahead and read on, is that there's a battle scenario being set up. And verse 14 begins with, therefore. So you, therefore, son of man, prophesy, and strike your hands together the third time. Let the sword do double. In other words, double damage. It's the sword that slays, the great, that enters their private chambers. I've set the point of the sword against all their gates, that the heart may melt and many may stumble. Ah, he says, it's made bright. Grasp for slaughter. Swords at the ready, thrust right, set your blade, thrust left, wherever your edge is ordered. I'll also beat my fists together, and I will cause my fury to rest. I, Yahuwah, have spoken. So I would say that's fairly clear. At least it does seem to me, Ken. He's not pulling any punches, nor is he pulling back on the sword. Go ahead.
Yeah, I believe, like, here we see first in verse 15 regarding this point of the sword against their gates. Their heart faints, ruins are multiplied, made bright, meaning brought to light, in other words, because remember, they had been hiding all of their sin. They'd been hiding their intentions, you know, all of this stuff they've been doing secretly, behind people's backs and literally stabbing them, you know, going after things for their own, agendas. Kind of like today again, but anyway, so that's what I'm seeing in 15, and I feel like one could read these words a number of different ways, considering there's no subject mentioned at the start of it. But I would have to stick thus with the previous subject, being the sword. It probably does not matter how the sword is held or which hand is used, it will slaughter as Yah desires. Now, if the subject is the wicked, then it's stating that it does not matter at this point which way they turn in their walk. Their judgment and doom is already set. And Yah will make sure that his desire is done. And he is then given rest from such wickedness. That's actually commenting on verse 16. Now, I forgot to mention a little bit about verse 15 with this sword that makes them faint, brings things to light, etc. Now, I believe these words of the sword against their gates could be an allusion to the siege upon Yerushalayim with Nebuchadnezzar's army surrounding the city, and thus they're at every gate. But it could also be an allusion to the spiritual aspect, in which what they were seeing and hearing, for example, were their gates, right? Because remember, a lot of times when Yah speaks about gates, you know, your gates, he's speaking of things where you allow information to come and go. you know, to come in would be through your eyes, through your ears, through your touch, your taste, you know, things like this. Those are your inward gates, and then your outward gates is usually from your mouth. Okay, and that's what we're judged upon actually is from that gate, right? What you actually say, and actually what you do, you know, your actions. That's another outward gate. But their gates had brought the greatest concern is what Yah is saying here, and thus Yah is having Ezekiel have them see and hear such examples in their midst. But it's interesting to see that Yah still wants the sword itself to be the focus, and thus it's bright and sharpened for such killing, and wrapped to take care of itself until its work be presented to it. So, you know, he is taking the sword in this verse 15 and kind of amplifying its effects in order to put fear into them. And then he goes on, like I said, in 16 to say that it doesn't matter what direction this sword is held, you know, in which hand and where it's moving to, Yah will make sure that it slaughters as it should. and that will be its face as well. Wherever its face is set, it will slaughter as Yah's intent is, okay? Now, verse 17, and you did read this verse, right, MC?
Yeah,
about him smiting his hands together? Okay. And it will cause fury and then give him rest is really what it's saying here, right? So verse 17, I find the similarities here quite interesting because the first thing that dawned on me in these last few verses actually about the hands being smitten together, like you saw it back in verse 14 and you see it here again in verse 17. You know, the only other place I can find it other than in the scroll of Ezekiel is back in Bamidbar or Numbers chapter 24 when Balak's anger is kindled against Balaam. And it was written back in Numbers 24 verse 10. It's written, and Balak's anger was kindled against Balaam and he smote his hands together. And Balak said unto Balaam, I call thee to curse mine enemies, and behold, thou hast altogether blessed them these three times. So you can see why he's so angry and so upset. He was literally using Balaam, you know, hiring him for a lot of, you know, goods, a lot of gold, a lot of, you know, worldly possessions. He was willing to give him much, much, you know, wealth, in other words, so that he would come and curse the people of Israel. And yet, because Yah dealt with Balaam in his own way, he ended up blessing them, you know. But I find it really interesting here that in this verse, firstly, in comparing them both, right, and comparing what we're seeing here in Ezekiel with what happens back there with Balak and Balaam, we see that the striking of hands is certainly an outward sign to others in view that one striking their hands are actually angry. You know, this is due to anger. Now, in today's scenarios, I can see someone, for example, you know, punching their other hand, as many punch something nearby in anger, such as a wall. I've seen, I remember my son when he was little, he was so angry, he went to punch a wall when we were living in Kazakhstan, and our walls were literally concrete. So he punched the wall, and he actually broke a bone, and I ended up having to fly him up to Germany just to get him, you know, taken care of so we could see a good doctor, you know. But that's, you see that a lot today. You know, people, when they really get angry, they want to punch something, you know, so they possibly punch a wall or something like that. But, and, you know, here, okay, we're seeing that this anger, there, he's smiting their, well, both Balak
well,
and
Ezekiel. Well, let me comment on that part, because that's an interesting observation.
Go ahead.
If I can, Ken, when I see somebody, and I've had friends or at least acquaintances that I would see get really mad, and they would break things, and they would throw wrenches when they were working on a car or smash a hole through the wall. Quite frankly, I always thought those kind of people were probably a bit hot-headed, immature, not necessarily the kind of folks I want to hang around. And on the other hand, I think in this case, sure, we're talking about the creator of the universe. And when he gets angry enough to smite his hands together or have the prophet do it on his behalf, you got to figure it's not like he isn't long-suffering. It's not like he hasn't had plenty of reason to go ahead and do it. And when he does it,
that's right,
he's also warned them. And I think that's a key point here, too. So he has basically said, look, I've warned you. I've had it. And here you go. This is what you asked for. Here's what you're going to get.
Right. Absolutely. Now, and then what's even more interesting here is likening the two instances is the fact that it took Balaam three times over in his actions to finally.
But the person has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet.
Okay.
Goodbye.
To finally get Balak to this state of anger. And here we see in verse 14 of Ezekiel chapter 21, and in 17, which is related to Yah's anger, was that the sword was to strike a third time. I'm not so sure that Balaam's blessing three times put Balak to rest, but this appears to be the ways of Yah in that this third instance of fulfillment would put him to rest. That's Yah, by the way. You know, three is most assuredly a Yah number. And as we well know, fulfillment is his game. So, I believe this was to make sure that it's done. It's to let us know that it will be done as he prescribes it. And because of that fulfillment, it will put Yah to rest and he can, you know, he won't have to be angered to this point of, you know, sending a sword to kill his own people, which is what he's doing. You know, that's chastisement in the worst degree, is it not?
Well, or at least a well-deserved degree. We'll go with that.
Yeah, most assuredly.
Okay.
By the way, did I just hear? Oh no. Okay, we don't have him.
No, I got a note from Phil saying he is on now. So is he really on here? I don't see him in the room, or I don't see him online.
I just thought that I heard his voice just a second ago.
He might have been on for a second.
Maybe he was online and
maybe he dropped the call again.
Strange. Okay.
Phil says he's on.
Okay. My next comments are on 18 through 21. I don't think you read that far, did you?
I did not. I read as far as what I said, 17 there. Let me go ahead and let's read on, and we'll see if we can't get Mark Patron while we're doing about six other things at once here. The word of Yahuwah came to me again, saying, "And son of man, appoint for yourself two ways for the sword of the king of Babylon to go. Both of them shall go from the same land. Make
a
sign.
Put it
at the head of
that
the
has not been
the
set up yet."
Okay, so we're still having Phil trying to get him on. So, gonna make a sign, put it at the head of the road to the city. Appoint a road for the sword to go to Rabbah at the Ammonites and to Judah into fortified Jerusalem. So he basically got, you know, a fork in the road, two ways for the sword to go. For the king of Babylon stands at the parting of the road, at the fork of the two roads, to use divination. He shakes the arrows. He consults the images. He looks at the liver. So some basically pagan ways of trying to decide which way to go here. He's being laid out. And when we get back,
exactly,
we'll pick up and we'll see what all this leads to. So stay with us. We'll have MP at some point.
Soon, because I am here for reasons. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know someday the Lord turns around. Because all my life I've been waiting for,
Do-do-do-dum, do-be-do-dum-dum. Dum. Come a come a dum, do-be-do-dum-dum. Dum. Come a come a dum, do-be-do-dum-dum. Dum. Keep the doors ajar, It's you, double B, and you. I keep the peace. Jabba's still 6,000 years old. It's not new. Tell him I did it.
Alright, we are back, folks. This is the Torah Teachers Roundtable Tanakh Edition. And, so far at least, we have, myself, Mark Call in Southern Colorado. Got Ken Irvin on a lot further east, where I guess it's not as cold as it had been at any rate. And, he's almost in the swamp, but, real close by. And, in any case, Ken, we are still trying to get Mark Patron. I'm not sure what's happening with his phone, but it's he won't answer. I'm sure it's not because he's trying not to. But anyway, he won't answer when the station calls him. And so therefore he's not on with us, at least not yet. We got Phil online working on it. We'll see if we can't get him in here before the show's over. But for now at least, we haven't done a show in several weeks, so I'm anxious to at least get back in the groove here and continue chapter 21 of Ezekiel. So at the bottom of the hour, basically I was reading about the fork in the road and what was going to happen. Did you want to comment on anything we've got so far? Should I finish that section?
Yeah, I can comment on 18 to 21, which was about the fork in the road, and the king standing at that part. I'm kind of wondering if Yah is still remembering his judgment on the Ammonites from when he spoke in Yirmiyahu or Jeremiah chapter 49, which results in their captivity. And Rabbah is mentioned specifically in both places, both there and here. I believe he's now having Babylon set two paths, you know, the king of Babylon. Two paths, one to Yisrael and one to Ammon. And it's the capital cities that Yah wants him to attack, Rabbath and Jerusalem. He wants to make sure that they go so far as to create a sign to set the action. And as if it matters how the king of Babylon decided what to do, according to any and all divinations at his disposal and according to their culture, you know, no matter, you know, what he comes up with, Yah would direct his actions, as most assuredly the king does not know. Now, I have read that they used arrows in the way of drawing for lots, by the way. So, you know, that would be one way of divination, is drawing for lots with arrows. Also, the Canaanites had a science of prediction via the color and the segmentation of the livers of sacrificed animals. So it's amazing to think of all of the superstition that man has invented through the years, you know what I mean?
Well, and that's precisely what's being referenced. We see that a number of places in Scripture where he will make references to pagan practices, either as a prohibition, don't do this, or just simply saying, here's what they do, and as, you know, basically lifting it up for ridicule.
Yeah, and that's because, you know, his people are so weak that, you know, when they hear and see these things, they sometimes, you know, believe them. They believe some of these things might be truths, and you know, they go along with it. They're just a weak people at times, you know. But yeah, and this is what man has created in his own imagination, you know. So this is why you have these idols. You have different divination methods. You know, they just come up with this stuff.
I'm sorry, but the person you called has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet.
Okay.
Goodbye.
But anyway, so here, yeah, we can see that Yah wants to include Ammon in his judgment. So he wants to judge both Yisrael and he wants to judge Ammon. And I think that he's kind of leaving it up to, King Nebuchadnezzar on, you know, on the details. Okay. But as long as Yah's, desires to kill with the sword, which of course with Nebuchadnezzar's army, that would be the main method anyway. As long as that comes true and both, peoples are put down, which most assuredly King Nebuchadnezzar and his army, the Chaldeans, will most assuredly do, well, then Yah is getting his way, of course. And he's just leaving maybe a little bit of the detail up to, you know, the king to have his fun, I suppose, you know? Anyway, that's what I see up through verse 21. You want to read a couple more verses?
Yeah, let's continue because this is where we're going to see exactly what he's laying out here. So we got these two,
okay,
fork in the road, two paths. In his right hand is the divination for Yerushalayim, to set up slaughtering rams, to call for a slaughter, to lift the voice with shouting, to set battering rams against the gates, to build up a huge siege mound, and to build a wall. So basically, this is a war against Jerusalem, and this is generally the way that the wars were conducted against a walled city. You set up siege mounds, you encircle the place, you cut off the food and the water, and you say, okay, that's it, we'll see what happens. How long is it going to take before you guys either starve to death or decide to let us in or come out? Okay, and then verse 23
exactly
says, and it'll be to them like a false divination in the eyes of those who have sworn oaths with them. But he will bring their iniquity to remembrance so that they may be taken. So basically, again, this is about bringing iniquity to remembrance. And I'll say it as I'm going through here. Boy, if that doesn't pretty well sound like the things that are happening today, right? Bringing iniquity to remembrance. Hey, do you remember when Fauci said he's not going to do any gain-of-function stuff, but he's been literally building bioweapons to kill people? Remember when we said we're not going to rig an election, but they rigged it and then rammed it down your throats? Remember all this other stuff? Remember when they said the poison poke is going to be required? Hey, we're going to stuff it in all the NFL players. And now on Monday Night Football, they're croaking on live TV. We had two NFL players, one dead and one in a critical condition with heart issues on the same day, one of them on national TV. So all kinds of things are being brought to remembrance. And ultimately, that their iniquity is being revealed, their Torahlessness. Therefore, thus says Yahuwah Eloheka, because you have made your iniquity, your Torahlessness, to be remembered, in that your transgressions are uncovered, so that in all your doings your sins appear, because you have come to remembrance, you shall be taken in hand. Now to you, O profane, wicked prince of Israel, whose day has come, whose iniquity will end, thus says Yahuwah Eloheka, remove the turban, take off the crown, nothing remains the same. Exalt the humble and humble the exalted, overthrown, overthrown, he says, I'll make it overthrown. It'll be no longer until he comes whose right it is, and I'll give it to him. Now, in the English, the King James and the New King James and the variants, they capitalize the I will give it to him, the capital H part. So, okay, go ahead, Ken. Hmm. Where would you like to go with all of that?
Okay. Well, firstly, you mentioned something about two football players. Now, I witnessed the one football player in the Bills game. He had a, you know, heart condition, supposedly, because of a chest hit, which didn't look very hard to me. I mean, not the way they played football.
Well, when you got clots, you know, all over your body and you have the poison poke and the strokes are basically in there waiting to come out, it doesn't take very much,
yep,
it seems. And they're
that's right.
They're lying through their teeth. What was interesting to me, Ken, I looked at the Daily Mail's coverage of this overnight. They mm-hmm. pointedly do not even hint that there could be any connection, how dare you say anything like that, with the stroke poke.
Oh, of course, son. Yep. Yeah, but so who was the other person you mentioned that actually died?
It wasn't a name that I knew. Right, I'll pull up the article here. It was it was not even a team that I remembered hearing much about, but I'm not a big football fan. A Jaguars player who was 30-some-odd years old. He was at his wife's house, and he just basically went into the bedroom. They found him dead a little while later.
Oh, okay. Okay. Wasn't actually playing football.
I'll pull up the article. The problem was, this was a guy who has been publicly tweeting about how he took the Moderna vaccine. He's really thrilled about it. And if you didn't take the vaccine, shame on you. You probably need to go to jail and be much humiliated for it. And I guess maybe there's another option.
And then he croaks.
And then he's gone. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that something? Right. Okay. Well, I was just curious about that. I have a hard time talking with anybody at work because, well, you know, there are just a lot of liberals here and there and everywhere. And me, I'm one of those, you know, old school type guys. But anyway, let me get back to the verses at hand here. So verse 22 starts with his right hand. Now that to me already tells me that this is more important than what's on the left hand, by the way. So to me, he's going to address his people first, because doesn't he always address his people first when it comes to judgment? Doesn't he
always
tell us as well?
It's a standard, you know, begin at my sanctuary. Well, we talked about that not long ago.
Exactly. Yep. Begin at my tabernacle. Yeah. So, yeah, he likes to address his people first, I think. And this king of Babylon is not messing around. I mean, much thought has gone into the attack. As you can imagine, Yah led him to do this, to strategize heavily and with much detail and with utmost assurance. So even shouts from his armies will ensure that Israel will feel the fear as they witness their city being brought under siege. You know, imagine that too. Kind of like when the Indians used to, remember, they used to surround a bunch of the cowboys and their families and their wagons and go round and round them and shout. You know, I wonder if that didn't come from Yah's ways from years before, you know, many, many years before. But yeah, they would go round and round and shout at him. Anyway, even the shouts from this armies will ensure that, you know, this fear. And because they know that Nebuchadnezzar is not really doing all of this via divination, they have been told and know that Yah's every word does come true. And thus, Yah is truly directing all of this effort against them. And as Yah forewarned them through multiple true prophets, his will be done upon them. And being stated that this is the act of the right hand should be a witness to us, the reader, that bringing down Israel, I believe, is just simply more important to Yah than Ammon. Okay? And that's, let's see, that's what I was getting at through verse 23. And believe it or not, that's pretty much the end of my notes. So from here on out, we're going to be going on the seat of my pants.
Well, that's okay. That'll
anyway.
That makes for good discussion as a general rule. And who knows? Maybe we'll actually get Mark Petrillo on here. I'm keeping one eye on that one. And, Phil is still working it as near as I can tell. But we read through the end of the chapter.
Well, hold on.
We read through the end of the section here.
Yeah,
we're going to change themes essentially in verse 28. Okay. And you, he continues, O son of man.
Yeah, let me
go ahead.
No, I was going to say let me comment a little bit more here on verses 24-25. You did read up through 25, right?
I read through 27.
27, okay. So here in verse 24, I mean, yeah, I think this is really important that we see that, that their iniquity will be remembered, that their transgressions are discovered. So again, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, they often do things, you know, not openly, but, secretly, especially when in sin against their own father, Yah. Okay. They're Elohim. they think that they're doing these things secretly, you know. But of course, Yah knows the heart. Of course, he knows what's happening. But he literally brings all of this to light, you know. He makes it appear so that even all can see what wickedness they have inside them and what they have done. So that's what he's actually stating here, that their sins, that their transgressions and their iniquity will all be shown. You know, it will come to light. Just as in the end of days, we're supposed to, witness, Antichrist and all of these, you know, type of things in the end of days. We're actually going to see the sins of the wicked, which I believe a lot of us are seeing it right now. You know, we're seeing what kind of wicked things they're doing with this vaccine even, you know? So, anyway, that's just something that Yah does with the wicked. He makes sure that the sin, comes to light. And that's what he's doing here with his own people. You know, he's making sure that all, of their neighbors, including, of course, the, Babylon and the Chaldeans, et cetera, all of their neighbors will see what kind of wickedness they've been doing, you know, and that they are brought down because of it. So they will know exactly what happened. And in verse 25, I mean, he's actually pointing to, the king, really, the prince of Israel. Okay, telling him he is profane and he is wicked. Boy, doesn't that ring a bell in today's, power here in the United States of America? I can't help but think about the wickedness at the top of the ladder, at the top of the chain. You know? I mean, there is such wickedness going on. It's just terrible. And of course, a lot of it is hidden from the people. I mean, once we find out a lot about what's on the son's laptop, I think we're going to find out just how wicked they all really are.
Well, you know, the truth is we've known for a long time how wicked they are and what is on the laptop, because the laptop's been available. What we're really finding out is how wicked the people who have been covering it up for it and calling themselves law enforcement, but in fact they're nothing but Gestapo, and I'm referring to the Federal Bureau of Investigation in that sense, how wicked they really are.
Yeah, amen. And they're all in each other's pockets, so to speak, you know.
That's putting it kindly.
They're all working together. Yes. but they're definitely working together anyway. So anyway, then you see here in verse 26, this is the purpose in chastisement. Remember that, because Yah does chastise the people that he loves. He truly chastises them so that they will change. And what kind of change is he showing here? He says, remove any, you know, beautification, the diadem. That would be like beautification. Take off the crown, meaning take away any power, you know. So really what's happening here is this profane, wicked prince of Israel, mentioned in the previous verse. Okay. He will lose it all. He will lose his power. He will lose his wealth, his, you know, whatever makes him beautiful, et cetera, et cetera. And then what Yah says, that we will exalt the low and we will bring down the high. You see that at the end of verse 26. This is a part of chastisement as well. Okay. Those who are humble and who are loving people, they will be exalted. But those which often are in power, even those who lift themselves up, right? They, you know, those that are on high, so to speak, they will be brought low. That's what a base means, you know. They will be brought down, and that's the way Yah operates, you know. And then he goes on to say in verse 27. Notice he mentions the word overturn three times. That's the word avah in the Hebrew, Strong's number H5754. He mentions it three times. Now, sometimes he'll mention a word twice for emphasis, but I think we've been seeing this, right? When he does something three times, it's for complete fulfillment, right? I mean, we even went back to connected the one time that he, even Balak was so upset, and he mentioned three times. But here we see three times he says he will overturn. Now, what does that mean? That means, you know, those who are wicked will be brought down low, and those who are low, who are humbled, etc., will be brought up. And that's what overturning is, you know. He's going to flip it all. And thus the wicked will be no more. And it goes on to say, until he come who's right, and I will give. So, of course, right is the word mishpat, which has to do with righteousness, right? Those who come who are righteous. These are the ones who will be given power. At least that's what I'm thinking. I don't know. I wonder if that's even referring to Messiah. You know, that such power will be given to him, or give it to him.
Well, I like
at
that
the end of the verse
that's,
here.
That's how the King James would like to interpret.
I'm not sure
it
how that's read.
They capitalized it in this sense. That doesn't necessarily
exactly.
mean that that's the way it
word,
should be, but that's certainly is the way that it's been interpreted here.
Right. Okay. Anyway, yeah. Let's go ahead and read a little bit more then beyond 27.
Okay. Well, so I read through. I read 28.
Oh, did you?
Starting at 20. Well, okay. Let's just start at 28 again. And you, O son of man, prophesy and say, thus says Yahuwah Eloheka concerning the Ammonites and concerning their reproach, and say the following. And we're going to take this to the break. We've got about a minute and a half. A sword is drawn, polished for slaughter, for consuming, for flashing, while they see false visions for you, while they divine a lie to you, and that too ought to ring a bell with today's false prophets, to bring you on the necks of the wicked and slain, whose day has come, whose iniquity shall end. Return it to its sheath. I will judge you in the place where you were created, in the land of your nativity. I'll pour out my indignation on you. I'll blow against you with the fire of my wrath and deliver you into the hands of brutal men who are skillful to destroy. Hey, that sounds a lot like the Biden Fuhrer and those who pull his chains and all of those who are skillful men who have learned how to destroy real well. Remember Obama's famous quote, I'm really good at killing? You shall be fuel for the fire. Your blood shall be in the midst of the land. You shall not be remembered, for I, Yahuwah, have spoken. Go ahead, Ken. You got a little, just a little under a minute at this point.
Okay. Yeah, here we see that Yah is addressing the Ammonites, and he's actually telling them that he's going to pour out his indignation upon them as they are in their own land, even in their own place where they were created, in the land of their nativity. So, even if they think they are safe in their own strongholds, etc., what's he going to do? He's going to put forth someone greater than them, a brutish men who are skillful and who are skillful in destroying, which will be them. They will be, well, he goes on to say, they'll be fuel to the fire. There will be blood, of course. So we know that the sword will be used, and they will no more be remembered. Now that's such a huge word for Yah in terms of remembrance.
Right.
Let's talk more about that.
I'm breathing, and I pray, don't take me soon, cause I am here for a reason. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know something, it'll all turn around. Because all my life I've been waiting for, I've been praying for the people to say that we don't want to fight no more. There'll be no more, and our children will pay. One day, one day.
Sometimes I lay under the moon.
Welcome to the Torah Teachers Roundtable, Apostolic Edition, with your hosts Rob Miller, Mark Patron, and yours truly, Mark Call. We hope you'll find this discussion entertaining, thought-provoking, and that above all, you'll be like the Bereans and search out the scriptures for yourself, see if these things be true. Okay, well, all of a sudden the music almost just quit, but the note on my Skype panel says that Mark Patron is with us, although I don't see him and I can't hear him, I don't think. Mark, are you there? Is it true you're finally here or not? He has this tendency to kind of disappear with the same puff of smoke that he came into the conversation with, Ken. How about it? Are you still there at any rate?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right. Well, disappointing as it may be, let's just continue. When we went to break, I was reading through the end of the chapter here. Did you want to comment on any of that before we continue?
Yeah, I was kind of glancing through scripture, and I find a lot about Ammon in throughout Judges, like Judges 11, in 1 Samuel, again in 1 Kings, 1 Chronicles. I mean, it's like Yisrael is just constantly battling these folks, apparently. So yeah, Ammon has always been a thorn in their side, so to speak. So I'm sure they've been remembered up until now, but you see in the last verse here, as Yah is destroying them, he says that they will no longer be remembered. That's a sad thing when a people are no longer remembered. Yah, when he puts something away, he doesn't fool around. And notice how he ends this whole chapter. He goes on to say, "For I, Yahuwah, have spoken it." When he speaks something, it happens. That's plain and simple. So he wants us to remember this, that he says what he's going to do. He lets us know, you know, what he's going to do, whether it's good or bad. And we need to remember that he said it, and thus it is to come to pass, and it will come to pass. No ifs, ands, or buts, you know. And I think that's why he wants to remind us at the end of all this. Remember, I spoke this, and thus it will happen, you know. It's always good to remember that he does speak actions into existence, into this world. Yeah, he did it in the very beginning, and he's doing it constantly throughout Scripture. So anyway, yeah, that's all I have up through the end of the chapter here.
Okay, I guess, you know, there's a lot of descriptive information here, and yet ultimately it's fairly simple. And you pretty well summarize it. I have said I was going to do this. You guys deserve it. And I've warned you, and my patience is at an end. And here you go. Here comes the sword. And it's going to be really not only bad, but you shall not be remembered. That's how bad it's going to be.
Right. Yeah, he means it. Anyway, I guess we can start reading a little bit into the next chapter.
Yeah, let's go ahead and continue into the next chapter, because this has been the goal, is to continue eventually and talk about some of the places where all of this leads us. And I am particularly fascinated with chapter 22 and then into chapter 23. I would say in terms of where we are today, and I'll preface the next hour and the next show or so as well. This is some of the most important prophetic stuff in all of Ezekiel, and it certainly is ever so poignant today. Okay, so chapter 22 says, "Moreover, the word of Yahuwah came to me," meaning the prophet, "saying, Now, son of man, will you judge the bloody city? Yea, Yes, you got it. Show her all of her abominations. And I look at this, and I got to say it, Ken, with present company accepted, you know, he seems to be referring to Jerusalem as the bloody city. And yet, you got to admit, if you look at the places on planet Earth today that would qualify as that, I got to put the swamp at the top of the list of places that could be also called the bloody city. Because they love killing kids. They love injecting lots of people with the poison poke. They got the one of the most evil men to draw breath on planet Earth there. As we go through this, I think that'll resonate. I'll read a couple more verses and we'll go to you. Then say, thus says Yahuwah Elohecha, the city sheds blood in her own midst, that her time may come, and she makes idols within herself to defile herself. Anybody have any doubt about how many idols there are in the various bloody cities that worship the sacrament of child killing and adult killing and sudden adult death syndromes and massive poisons and you name it? Yep, they make idols within themselves to defile herself. You have become guilty by the blood which you have shed, and have defiled yourself with the idols which you have made. You have caused your days to draw near, and have come to the end of your years. Therefore, I have made you a reproach to the nations, and a mockery to all countries. Now, listen to that and ask yourself, you know, the country that has sent emissaries abroad and says, you know, we don't care about anything. We don't care about our own borders. We don't care about whether we provoke World War III. But hey, if you don't have LGBTQ at the top of your worship list, we are going to come after you with what's left of our gayed up, dumbed down military. They have made certainly America a mockery to all the nations, and that too ought to resonate. What's what we're seeing? Hey, I think I'm almost, this is almost beyond hope, but it sounds like we have Mark Patron with us. Are you actually here, Mark? Say something. Howdy.
Oh, I see him on there.
I do too.
But he's not,
he typed a text.
He's not saying anything.
He's up with Skype.
Okay,
well, we'll see if he can't actually manage to talk. He's this is more than we've seen.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a
start.
Go ahead, Ken. Go ahead and comment.
Let's cross
on that
our fingers
let
here.
MP, if he can listen, maybe he'll be able to talk.
Well, firstly, he points to Ezekiel here in verse 2, because, again, he's calling him son of man, and says, will thou judge? And he says, yes, yes, you will judge. So, you know, this is actually a picture for all of us, by the way. Okay. And I think Paul or Shaul in the New Testament was pretty clear about this too, about judging, you know, especially in 1 Corinthians chapters 5 and 6. If you take a look at those chapters, you can see that most assuredly we are to judge if we know how to judge, meaning if we know the ways of Yah, then we can judge righteously. But if we don't know the ways of Yah, kind of like to those that Messiah was speaking to in the fields, you know, when he went off, you know, speaking to those lost sheep, you know, the heathen, or, you know, Yisrael that had become heathen, okay? They did not know the ways of Yah, and thus he told them, judge not, because they did not know what righteousness was. So of course they cannot judge. That's where I think a lot of Christianity gets a little twisted and confused, you know. They want to claim that we're not supposed to judge each other. But actually, when we know Yah's ways, and we know what Yah says in the Torah, well, most assuredly we are to judge. And a matter of fact, even like I said, Paul or Shaul made it very clear in 1 Corinthians 5 and 6 that we will even be judging angels. So yes, we are to judge. And here he wants Ezekiel to judge right here and now. Okay. Because he wants him to know how wicked these, his children are. Yes, he is speaking, I believe, of Yisrael here. That is to be the bloody city, because remember, he's going to address them first. Is that Mark I'm hearing? Mark Drone? Oh, wow.
We're
He's
not
the mystery man. Okay. It's the mystery man.
Okay,
well,
you.
Here, I'll, let me finish up with this and then I'll give it over to you. Okay.
Yeah. Where are we at, by the way?
We're at your absence and we are continuing into chapter 22 at this point.
Oh, you're going into 22. Okay. I'm back like verse 8 of 21.
Yeah. I know exactly. So yeah, we're up here at the first four verses of chapter 22.
And I have nothing going on 22 yet.
Yeah, well, same here. I don't have any notes, but I'm just going with what I'm seeing. Yah is telling Ezekiel here that he wants him to judge and that he wants all these abominations to be shown, just like I was talking about in the last chapter. Remember, he wants to bring out the sin and the transgression and the wickedness. He wants it to be seen and known. And that's even from his own people. So that's how he goes on to say in verse 4 that they will be a reproach upon the heathen and they will be mocked by their neighbors. Because all of this wickedness, all of these abominations, the transgression, the sin, the iniquities are all being brought to light so that all can see the wickedness of Yah's people, you know, see exactly what they were doing. And now they can see that Yah is punishing them. It's not that he punishes unequally. Absolutely not. Again, he goes to his tabernacle first and cleans house, and he's cleaning this house. Let me tell you, he's putting them away. He is shedding blood, it says. There will be blood everywhere throughout the city. So that sword is just going to town. Yah is, of course, enraged and has fury, and he will not rest until that sword does its job, you know? And so he says there in verse 4 that because of this wickedness, the defiling of themselves through idols, he says. You know, he's giving some of the reasonings here, which it's just too freaky to see the correlation with today, because today the wicked are really the exact same. The same thing is going on today as what was going on in that day, you know, and it's when it's brought to light is when you know Yah's hand is really reaching in and making a change in the earth. When all this stuff comes to light, because he wants to make sure that we see it all. That we see the wickedness that was going on behind the scenes, et cetera, you know? That's what he's doing in verses 1 through 4. He's running the sword through the city. Bringing them to their death, and they are being made a reproach and even a mockery to their neighbors, because the neighbors can now see what Yah does even to his own people when they sin. And I'll give Mark Patron a chance to say what he may.
Yeah.
If we need to go back, well, we can go back, I guess, right, MC?
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. Let me run back a little bit here. Let's see. Nebuchadnezzar. I'm going back to verse 21 through 28 in chapter 21.
Okay.
Nebuchadnezzar used divination, which here means chance. Okay. The thing is that they had decided to try to figure out where they wanted to go. You know, Nebuchadnezzar, do we want to attack the Ammonites first? Do we want to attack Jerusalem first? And so they used divination. And what they said was, they were trying to figure out how they were gonna figure out where we wanted to go first. So they put names on. They wrote things on like arrows and stuff like that, and they reached into it. They put them all into a quiver, And then they reached into the quiver and pulled one out, and it said Jerusalem. And they put that one aside. And then they reached in and they grabbed another one, and it said Jerusalem. And they did that
exactly. It's like drawing lots, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly like that.
Yep.
And so that's what they were doing. And they were trying to figure it. And it kept coming up Jerusalem. You know, they might have put a whole bunch of stuff in there that said Ammon, and it came out reading Jerusalem. Yah says, I want you to go here.
That's right.
And yep. They call it divination. It's not divination. That's chance, actually. You know, if they put a couple of Ammons in there and a bunch of Jerusalems, then you're gonna get a whole bunch of Jerusalems come out. But if you pull all of them out and you don't get any Ammons, then something is going wrong. Okay, right. So they're being told with no equivocation, you go to Jerusalem and take them down. Okay, and Yah is driving that. They're trying other things, but Yah is telling them, you go here and you take these people down. Okay, that's basically what that divination is. It wasn't divination. Yah made sure that everything came out Jerusalem, but they put in 10 that said Jerusalem and 10 that said Ammon, and they all came out Jerusalem. Just how it was. So, where are you going to go? You're going to attack the person, you know, maybe they were quizzical. Why did that happen? How come I put 10 and 10 in and 20 of them came out Jerusalem? I don't understand this, but this is telling me, my divination is telling me that I should be going to Jerusalem to fight. So, you know, that's one of the things that Yah is able to do that you and I are not. Okay? If I put 20 things in, 10 of them say one thing, 10 in another, and I put them into a quiver, and then I pull it out, I put it on my back, and I reach over my shoulder and I pull one out. You got to figure that the first 10 might come out the same, but the other 10 all got to come out different. But it didn't.
That's right.
That's just amazing to me that, you know, they thought they were divining. They weren't divining. Yah was telling them where to go and what they had to do. And this is Nebuchadnezzar himself, all right? So it's not just his general, man. It's him himself. So this is a very cool portion of scripture. So to let us all know that the Yah that we serve is the one that can do and drive us to do those things that we don't expect to. If we listen and we do what he tells us to do, we're going to be blessed. And that includes Nebuchadnezzar, the guy who's coming to destroy Jerusalem. So it's an amazing, amazing thing. Yah wants stuff done, and he's going to make sure it gets done. That's what I got for that particular portion anyway.
Okay, are we ready? Then let's go ahead and continue and talk about chapter 22, MP. Again, I think we summarized at the end of the hour the gist of chapter 21, which sets up where we're at now, and that is I've had it, I've warned you, and now I'm going to do what I said I was going to do, and you all aren't going to be remembered anymore, for I, Yahuwah, have spoken.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? What's really cool here is that at the end of chapter 21, you know, at the beginning of chapter 22, Yah says, moreover, okay? He says, this is a continuation of what I was just telling you. Okay?
Right.
That's very cool. Just the choice of the word is cool, and it tells you all kinds of stuff about Yah and about how we ought to listen carefully. Anyway.
Okay. Amen.
Very good. So we read into the first part of chapter 22. Mark, you heard that, right? Do you have anything you want to add on that score?
I have not heard much of anything. I only just got connected to Skype again, and that's how I'm doing this. I haven't even had a chance to look at chapter 22 yet. I'm going to have to read some of this before I can comment on it.
Okay. Well, what we'll do is we'll go ahead and continue to read on then, and we'll pick it up there. So, Ken, did you have anything you want to add before we read a bit more?
No, I'm good up through verse 4, so if you want to start reading to verse 5, yeah.
Okay.
We'll see what else is said here.
So basically where we're at is, I have made you a mockery, a reproach to the nations, a mockery to all countries. Those near and those far from you will mock you as infamous and full of tumult. Boy, you could be reading the headlines today, right? Look, the princes of Israel, each one has used his power to shed blood in you. The princes of America, the governors, you know, so many of them that have used their power to do what? Say, you know, the hell with your kids. We're going to poke them. We're going to abort them. We're going to subsidize them. We may have them cut off their genitalia. Hell, if it's California, we might import them from other countries or from other foreign to the California, at least, states within the union and extradite. All of these things, they're being done today. In you, listen to this, they have made light of father and mother. In your midst, they have oppressed the stranger. In you, they have mistreated the fatherless and the widow. Uh-oh, and wait a second. And you have despised my holy things and profaned my Sabbaths. There's so much here. I could spend, you know, the rest of the show just going through and pointing out how many ways all of these things that were true then are at least as true now. But let's go ahead and pause. Mark, we'll go to you this time first, if you've got comments you want to make on that.
I do. This is really amazing. Those that are near, those that are far from thee, shall mock thee, which art infamous and much vexed. Okay? Now, he's talking to Israel again. And behold, the princes of Israel, everyone were in thee, to their power to shed blood. Okay? This so reminds me of the stuff that's been happening in the United States of America. And the churches are not saying anything about it. I haven't heard of really pretty much anybody saying anything about how we're repeating the history that we're reading in the scripture. We are absolutely repeating it. How many presidents of the United States have we seen since 1960? Okay, you remember when Eisenhower was did his farewell address? It was like the 16th or 17th of January in 1961, and Kennedy is about to take the White House, and he put out this thing, and he warned about the military-industrial complex. All right, the Eisenhower did. He warned about the military and the industry are getting together to take over the United States of America. Right, and the first overt act that those people did to do that takeover was to kill the president. I'm talking about Kennedy in 1963, November 22nd, 1963. That was the first overt act that people could see that proved that the military-industrial complex was what Eisenhower feared. Okay? And this is the same for all governments in the world. And especially those powerful governments like the United States, like the USSR, like Russia, like China is getting to be. Okay? And this stuff that we're reading here is like repeating the headlines that we've seen for the last, 8 or 10 months at least. Okay, on our television and on our radios as we're driving in the car. I mean, it is absolutely amazing that this stuff just keeps happening and keeps happening and keeps happening, and we don't learn.
Under the moon, I thank God I'm breathing, and I pray don't take me soon, cause I am here for a reason. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know something. I've been praying for the people to see.
Do-do-do-dum-do-be-do-dum-dum. Come-a-come-a-dum-do-be-do-dum-dum. Come-a-come-a-dum-do-be-do-dum-dum. Keep-dora-za-jo-do-do. It's you and I for me and you. I keep the peace. Jabba's still 6,000 years old. It's not new.
We are back, folks. This is the last segment for today, and we are... I don't think we're going to quite finish it, but we'll at least make a good start into chapter 22 of Ezekiel. Let's see. MP, were you finished when we went to break?
Ken was in the midst of giving us his wisdom.
Okay. Ken?
Okay. I can go ahead. Yeah. Firstly, in verse 7, now, I don't know what it says in some of the other. Let me look at some of the other ones. They've treated. Let's see. In thee have they set light. Father and mother made light of. Yeah. Now that makes more sense. Made light of, meaning they were belittled. Okay. That's right. That's
kinda
how
like
I'm
what
seeing
you see on network
this
TV
word,
any night of the week.
Kalal.
That's exactly right? What that says.
I said,
yeah,
like
because
what you
the
see
word
any
kalal,
night of the weekend on network TV in America.
I didn't understand that, Mark. Would you say that again?
They make light of father and mother, exactly like what you see any night of the week on network TV in America.
Right.
Absolutely.
That's a good point. Yeah. Bringing us down in that way. Yes.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
We're repeating everything that happens in the scripture right now, today.
Right.
And we wonder why we have the kind of leaders in our government as we do.
Our government. I'm not sure if I'd use that word, but, you know, something anyway that has replaced the Constitution.
The government of this nation.
Yeah, those in power. And that's what we're reading about right here, right? Verse 6 says...
Exactly.
The princes of Israel who had the power. They had the power to shed blood, and they did. And that's what they're doing today. They have the power, and they are. Yeah. And then it goes on to say that they literally cursed. That'd be one way to define that word kalal instead of made light of, but in terms of the father and mother. And then it goes on to say and dealt by oppression with the strangers. So even strangers, you're oppressing and causing them to vex fatherless and widows. Isn't that crazy? I mean, Israel was truly wicked. And apparently they were walking in such heathen ways, probably in a heathen, you know, calendar mindset, you know, with their own, you know, whatever that calendar was of that day. They probably had even no idea of what day the Sabbath was, possibly. Who knows? Because they were just doing whatever the heathen do on whatever days, you know, they had set in their ways. They were certainly despising its holy things because they were not righteous at all. So they were enjoying the wicked things and not doing the Kodesh or holy things. And then verse 9 is very interesting when you look at it, because boy, does it fit today again when it says that my children, I mean, he's talking about his children here, all of Israel, they are, it says, carry tales to shed blood. That word carry tales is like to be a tale bearer. You know, that's what that's being about. Being a tale bearer. I mean, think about Epstein of today, or Hunter Biden, you know, on the laptop, or what, you know, even probably all of China and the CPP or whatever they are. They're they probably have all kinds of goop on Biden right now, and they're probably using him and saying, you better do what we want or else we're going to, you know, tell the world all this. we're going to tail bear.
I don't think he's bright enough to understand.
I think that's how they got him in place
but,
to begin
but I'll
with,
bet
guys,
he's going along with it.
Well, he's going along with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they
but that's
him in
that's
there.
Exactly what's going on today. Yeah. But anyway, and this is to, again, shed blood, so to bring others down. And that he mentions is committing, it says lewdness, that word is, can also be rendered mischief, wickedness, crime, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So, he's really pointing out just how wicked his people are in all these verses. And in such detail that it fits today. I mean, we're all seeing all of this correlation. I just think that's amazing because it is yet another cycle, right? Because, you know, people don't care about the Sabbath today. Most of them don't even know when the Sabbath is, even
Most
in
of
this
whole
country.
The church doesn't That's care right. about it. They don't even know when his real birthday is. They don't know, well, they know much of anything about what Scripture says, and they're proud of it.
Yeah, that's right. And that's profaning, too. That's profaning his Sabbaths because they're belittled. They're put down. They're forgotten.
Well, so, yeah, exactly. In the Christian denominations, they completely forget about the Shabbat. The Shabbat is on what we call Saturday, okay, on the seventh day of the week, as it has been since the creation, okay? when Yah rested on the seventh day, and then he says, now you keep my Sabbath, okay? And that's on the seventh day of the week. And then people say, well, you know, that's really good, but, you know, Jesus was raised on the first day of the week. Well, I seriously doubt that. I seriously doubt that.
As the Sabbath, at the end of the Sabbath.
I believe it was on Shabbat, actually.
It was at the end of the Sabbath, you betcha. 72 hours, 3 days and three nights after the Wednesday burial.
Right. That's right.
Yep.
But they don't know any of that, and that's the problem.
There you go.
Exactly.
That's right. He was actually murdered on Wednesday, the middle of the week. And he was raised on the Shabbat.
Right.
I mean, it's so simple to see if you read the scripture for what it actually says. But the vast majority of quote unquote believers don't get it. They don't get it because we've been trained in this country. We've been trained to keep the Sunday Sabbath. We've been trained on that. Not only from the Catholic Church that started it, but also from all of her daughter churches. Okay,
you know it is. And, it's way too ironic that we're talking about this right now because today, and I mean just a few hours ago, when I was at work, one of my buddies he recently married a Catholic lady, and he's currently going through Catholic catechism.
Yeah,
and I had to tell him one of the main things that I have a real fault with Catholicism is the fact that you can look back throughout history and see so many different bishops and popes all throughout history have claimed that they had the authority to change the Sabbath from Saturday to Sunday. They
That's
had the
exactly
authority.
Right. They had the authority. Where they got it, I don't know.
You're right.
No,
now, of course,
we
know
they
that
got
they
it.
Teach it's,
they got
it was Peter. You know, he was
succession.
The first pope.
They got an apostolic succession, and they will claim that it was passed down from that first pope through all the other ones. And when they sit in St. Peter's chair, they get to say,
Peter.
Hey, God, here's what you got wrong today. The vicar of Christ says, you blew it on the Sabbath. You blew it on fish on Friday, pork, you name it, marriage. Hell, we decided that we want our priest to be celibate. That way we can have greater power within the church, and we don't have to worry about them getting uppity on us. So many things that all basically make the same point.
That's right.
Sure does. Yeah. So anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt you, MP.
Well, you know, there's a lot of discussion points here. I guess the thing that leaps out at me, and the reason why I find this chapter so interesting, and we're going to see it again with a lot more detail when we get to chapter 23 next week, but essentially all of this are indictments that were leveled against Jerusalem in that day. The southern kingdom, remember, there are two kingdoms, both of whom have engaged in whoring, and what we're going to see is that those same indictments are every bit as appropriate today. It's part of the reason why, as we've been pointing out, the whore church, the whore synagogue are both still in exile for the very same reasons.
Yep.
Yep. True.
Okay.
I think we can read on a little bit.
We've got about 15 minutes. How do you want to continue it at this point?
You finished reading through verse 9, didn't you, MC?
I did. I read through, I read through basically, men who slander causing bloodshed. So I didn't read 9. I started up to 9.
Okay. I think, MP and I both commented up to this area here. So
yeah,
okay. Read a little
let's
bit more.
Continue, because we're going to continue to see that all of these things.
Okay.
I'll tell you what. I got something I'd like to share with you from from chapter 21. As I was reading through there, I came across this thing. We had the flashing light what verse was this? In 28. Okay, the flashing light, and that flashing light was translated from the word Barak. And that's what got me off on the Bush Clinton crime family thing that I was talking about earlier. I mean, it means to divide and to separate. Okay, to separate and develop, to divide or separate. The flashing light of Barak. Okay, so and that's exactly what we got from that guy named Barak. Okay. A division and a separation. Now, you know, he was supposed to be the last in the line of the Bush Clinton crime family, and Hillary was supposed to enter or to bring in the New World Order. And, gee, somebody not from the crime family won the presidency.
Yep.
People may not like him, but he held off a lot of the judgment that was coming against us just because he was not part of the crime family. That crime family, I believe, began with George H.W. Bush. Okay. And, it passed on mm-hmm. to Bill Clinton. They were buddies, you know, and, they set up Air America in the Mena, Arkansas, airport. And, let's see. And when Bill was done, then who comes in but George W. Bush, okay, who was daddy's little lackey. And after that, we got Barack Obama, who was, you know, just he made it even worse. And we were supposed to get Hillary. And that's why she cried for 3 days after the election was finalized. Okay, because she didn't get to do what she was supposed to do, which was to bring in the New World Order. Go ahead.
MC.
Who thought a good little girl like you could destroy all of my beautiful wickedness?
She was a true witch, too.
Oh, still is.
Yep.
Okay, well, so...
Anyway.
Okay, so we can move on.
Yeah. You want to read a little bit more?
Because all of this is just we're going to have time to finish, not quite all the chapter, but certainly we're going to see these parallels continue next week. Listen to this and see if it doesn't sound like something you could read in the New York Times or the WAPO. In you are men who slander to cause bloodshed. Well, now we got women who slander. They get elected because they count their own votes in for Arizona, for example. And you are men and women who slander to cause bloodshed. And you are those who eat on the mountains. In other words, you know, it's a pagan reference. In your midst, they commit lewdness. Hell, they sell kids. They go to Epstein Island. They fly the Lolita Express. You got it. They commit lewdness in your midst. In you, men uncover their father's nakedness. And by the way, if they're in the military, they put on puppy outfits, and then they can teach little boys and girls and soldiers and sailors how to do likewise and pretend that they're chest feeding and so forth. In you, they violate women who are set apart during their impurity. In one commits abomination with his neighbor's wife, another lewdly defiles his daughter-in-law, and another in you violates his sister, his father's daughter. In you, they take up bribes to shed blood. You take usury and increase. In other words, fiat money, fake money, all the stuff that the entire world fiat economy and the biggest debt bubble in history is built on. You have made profit from your neighbors by extortion, and you have forgotten me, says Yahuwah Eloheka. Let's pause there. Guys, how many in that list are things that we don't see on a daily basis?
I can't think of any.
I guess I have to agree.
That is exactly what we see every day. And, you know, the money gets less valuable all the time because they just keep printing more paper to chase the same goods. So the paper has to, the amount of paper for the goods has to go up. Okay? Because the paper is worthless. It's absolutely worthless. Don't get me started on it, please.
Okay. Well, I mean, basically what we're talking about here is what
so
the Bible calls an abomination. Dishonest weights and measures are an abomination. And it's not like we haven't seen this, read this, known this for a long time.
That is
absolutely
true.
And that's what we've got in our, you know what, that's one of the reasons that President Kennedy was killed.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, because in March of 1963, he introduced United States notes to compete with the Federal Reserve. I think he wanted to get rid of the Federal Reserve. And so he wanted to take back the money supply, okay? And 6 or 8 months later, he's dead. And his vice president, who was a part of the military-industrial complex, took over.
The Biden of his day.
If you just connect some dots, you'll be amazed at what you'll find out.
Yep.
Anyway, some of these things mentioned in these verses that you just read are just sickening, disgusting.
Absolutely.
I mean, even verse 10 about humbling her, meaning, you know, probably considering rape, humbling her that was set apart for uncleanness. That means like that time of the month, you know, Nida, Tame is that's pointed out when a woman is unclean.
Yeah.
You know, for about a week or so. And she cannot come to the tabernacle during that period of time.
Well, and basically,
but here it's saying that
part of the
humble.
Reason for that is because the time of the woman's monthly nidah or period, as we would say in modern English, has to do with the time when an egg, which was a possible new life, didn't get fertilized and it's being shed. So there is a connotation, and this is where tame is often described in Scripture with death. This is a potential life that didn't make it. So this is a connection with death, and therefore it is it's unclean. And it really is it does not explicitly say that, but it says it in so many ways in so many other places that it's hard to not draw the connection. Mark, were you going to say something?
No, I wasn't. I was
maybe that was Kim.
Kind of agreeing with you.
Yeah, and then it goes on, talks about the neighbor's wife. You know, that's a part of the Ten Commandments right there. Abomination with the neighbor's wife. Defiling a daughter-in-law. I mean, all this stuff is just, you know, men doing wicked things, most definitely.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's, you know, the women probably acquiesced as well. You know, I'm not gonna leave them out of it because, you know, they're sinners too, just like we are. But, you know, the fact is that a grown man defiling his daughter, there's something wrong there. There's something wrong in that head.
Well, that would be Biden of today.
Yes, sir.
Because the daughter wrote those words in her own diary, right?
Yep. Absolutely. And people don't care. Your average person on the street doesn't care about that stuff.
Well, they're even going to legalize all this stuff.
Yeah, that we're being led by men who would rather defile one of their own children, okay, than go without having sexual pleasure for a particular time. Right. I mean, it's wicked in the extreme, absolutely wicked in the extreme. We need to guard ourselves against this as well. By the way, because it's Hasatan who puts these thoughts in our minds, okay, to begin with. Okay, ooh, isn't she pretty? Well, you know, sorry, you gotta get behind me, man. I'm not gonna deal with that. Okay, that's what I'm saying to Hasatan anyway. I'm not gonna deal with that.
Okay, yeah, and verse 12 kind of fits today's. Elite, you know, what they're doing with all of the other elites in the world.
Yeah.
Through the poke and the jab is, you know, so they're making all this money through, you know, the vaccine companies and, the way the stock market changes and all this and that, you know, they're making gobs of money, whereas they're bringing the regular people down low, you know, robbing them blind, so to speak.
That's right.
So it is all about usury and increase and greedily gaining, you know?
And that was part of what the COVID pandemic was all about, the fake pandemic. It's absolutely amazing. Right. that was a part of this, to get our minds off of what's going on in the government and get our minds on what we can do to make things better. You know what? We can't do anything about illnesses, but those things were created specifically for what they did. And they were literally created in a lab. Okay. COVID did not exist until 2 or 3 years ago, or 3 or 4 years ago, I should say. And then they found something that kills, and they made it. They used the factory system to create it so that it's going to kill off millions and millions and millions of people, hundreds of millions of people, and make hundreds of millions of others sick permanently. Now we've got babies being born, stillborn, with those clots in their bodies that are caused by the vaccine that was taken by the mother. There's something wrong. There's something wrong here, and we have got to find some way to stop it, or Yah is going to destroy us. And I really believe that's coming in the next few years, no matter what. The end of this world system will be only a few years off from now, unless there's a major revival. Good luck with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll have to see.
Well,
we're just about at the end.
We're going to pick it up next week at around this place. The next few verses are going to end up the chapter say, the word of Yahuwah came to me again, saying, the house of Israel has become dross to me. Well, I guess we could add that that's pretty clearly very similar to what should be said today. Anything else, guys, before we get the music coming up? We only got a few seconds. How about you, Mark? We didn't hear from you much today.
Well, you heard a lot from me for the last half hour. No, just you folks out there in Radio Land, guard your hearts.
All right, and that'll do it for this week. We'll pick up and finish chapter 22 of Ezekiel next week. Thanks a lot, folks. Shalom.